Does anybody know what furniture was in the court?
The lathe.
And?
The altar.
And sacrifice place.
Must have been awash with blood. Must have been gross.
Things that intrigued me about it was that the mercy seat is hammered work.
Mm.
So is this.
Yeah.
I haven't read up about these. This is the shittim wood, or the acacia wood, or cedar wood, depending upon what you're reading. So is this. The ark itself is. These are all gold. This, I think, is bronze.
Mm.
I can't recall what they were on. Bronze as well. Okay, so... any idea what all of that might... Does it suggest anything to anybody? The furniture, the placing, the substances they're made out of?
Just on the order of things, like you spoke about furniture being mentioned, you know, before.
Yeah.
Certainly when you look at from chapter 24, the thing that struck me is that it's internal, like moving from internals to externals.
Yeah. So...
what's within to what's without.
Yeah, this is the first thing that... In fact, this is the first thing that's mentioned. Then there's this. Mm. Then we move on to these. The altar of incense?
It's not mentioned.
Not mentioned. No. So for the moment...
You've got my altar.
For the moment, it's not there.
Yeah, it's like you've got to have, you know, all the golden things. You've got to have some experience of love and something for the Lord to be able to build the tabernacle around it.
Mm. Yep. Yeah. So our picture for the moment is without the incense. Be aware of that. It does end up in the eventual design, but it's not there yet. So you've got this furniture. This is the first thing. Let's see, let's number it. One. Two. What's the next thing that's designed in the chapter? Anybody else? Chapter 25.
It's written on there.
It moves into the bread, the tables.
Table.
The...
Yeah. It's written on the right hand side of the board.
That's clever, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
The other thing that's not in that picture, but the materials are asked for, Aaron's garlands and stones. So they are in the picture as well.
Yes. Yes. Then, of course, we move on, and I think, let me just check the next chapter 27. We have the altar of burnt offering in the court. He talks about the care of lampstand. That's when then the 28th, the priest... wood garments come in, leave by the breastplate. So this then is the next thing that gets later. Okay.
The altar of incense is in chapter 30.
Okay. So chapter 30. Chapter 27. So, look, here's what I make of this. The tabernacle is very definitely built to house all this stuff. Okay, it's the stuff that's described first, and that's the most important part. But I think we have influx. Okay, so this is identified as where the Lord resides. There's a place that it resides here. It's that stuff. And it's particularly like the testimony which is contained within the ark. But there is a connection, I think, between each of these pieces of furniture and these pieces of furniture. So I'm going to get a different coloured text now. All right. So for me, there's a very definite correlation between these two because they're made of the same stuff.
Mm.
All right. So the ark... and the table of showbread, the mercy seat, and the candlestick, and then of course they flow out here as well. Right, I'm not going to speculate where these are different materials, but it flows out there. And then I think the altar of incense comes in, because that's all about, that's about offering, and that's our reciprocation. See, that's what we then return to the Lord. So that's my understanding of things at the moment from what I can read. So there's the Lord's life, the influx, but it's an outflowing, an outpouring of life into various levels of our mind and into, you know, to our very bodies. And then there's the return, our return to the Lord through the incense, table of incense. Cherubim on this veil, but not on the screen here. So there's, and even in the way that the whole ritual around it is set up, there's access into this part that is not into this part. Anybody anything else to say? In any case, do so at any time. But here's some things. There's far too many copies, so there'll be a pile down there in front of Michael and Elizabeth. This first sheet that I've given you is it's a brief summary of the on the first page anyway of Swedenborg's material. I really wanted to read you this section. This is 9,632, chapters 2 and 3. Scarcely anyone is aware of the fact that a person governed by the good of love and faith is heaven in the smallest form this can take, or that such a person, in respect both of the more internal aspect of his being and of the more external, corresponds to heaven. If these things had been known, the learned in the Christian world who have acquired some knowledge regarding the parts of the human body could have received some light of understanding and therefore have had some concept of heaven. They could have discerned which particular realities in heaven are represented by the ark, its mercy seat, and the cherubim above it. Which particular realities by the table on which the loaves of the presence were laid, the lampstand and the gold altar for incense. Also, which particular ones are represented by the dwelling place, its curtains, boards and bases, and lastly by the tent and the two coverings over it. For similar things are met with in the human being, in the things with him that are internal and those that are external. They also present themselves in material form in his body. And to these material parts of his body, the internal things have an exact correspondence. For unless the external things which belong to the body had an exact correspondence with the internal ones, which belong to the understanding and the will, there would not be any life in the body, nor thus any actions in accord with them. Similar things are said to be met with in the tabernacle as in the human being, because representatives on the natural level resemble the human form and have the same meaning as the parts of it they resemble. External things within the human being provide four coverings which surround and enclose all that is more internal. These coverings are what animal skins and actual skins of the body refer to. See what has been mentioned from experience in these numbers regarding the correspondence of the latter to internal things. The coverings which constituted the roof and sides of the tabernacle provided a similar representation. From all this, the understanding may gain some light regarding the forms that heaven takes. So, there's something of real import here. Something worth spending the time to get your head around. The little table that I've provided you with is just breaking the chapter from AC up into its sections, its various sections. So the first few numbers, this is the interchapter material on charity and faith, and here in particular the subject is freedom. Then we have the various sections dealing with the different aspects of the chapter, and of course it will just follow the chapter through in the order in which it's presented. So we've got the dwelling place, the dimensions and joining of the linen curtains, we've got the wool curtains, their dimensions and their joining, and the two skin coverings. We've got the shittim boards, their bases and bars. We've got the veil, separating the Holy of Holies from the holy place. We've got the place of the mercy seat, the table and the lampstand. And we've got, so the positioning, not the design of them, but where they actually go. And we have the screen for the tent door. And the final thing is, so it should be spirits from another planet, who worship an intermediary angel. I knew you'd call that phrase because you were saying something about it on the first day. And I sort of pricked my interest. It's quite fascinating. So here are spirits from a particular planet who feel that God is too holy to worship. So the Lord provides them with an angel, and which he says, in actual fact, it's a community of angels to worship as an intermediary, as a way of getting to God through them.
Yeah,
like a high priest, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah. What? High priest. The whole thing is intermediary. This is a. And even the mountain, you know, like you spoke about the building of the mountain.
Yeah.
That idea that Moses is the intermediary between what is higher and lower.
Yes.
Yeah.
And fascinating thing.
So is that the external world?
Yes, it sure could be. Just as a point, just hold in mind, like this one is about the interchapter material. The first part of the interchapter material is freedom, that's the theme here. The previous, it's forgiveness of sins. So freedom follows on from the remitting of sins.
Nothing's without order, is it?
Absolutely, Paul. Absolutely.
Sorry, what was it?
But nothing's without order.
Nothing is without order.
Can I make a comment? first of all, I'm sorry to start with a typo. And in spite of what I said about Swedenborg's magnificent management of his own writing, 9585 shouldn't descend to 9581, it should ascend to 9591, first number reference.
9585 to 9581. Oh yes, it should be 9585.
Small point.
You are quite correct.
The thing that I want to make is again this sort of synchronicity thing. Reading the passage this morning in church was very much about those who are the skin in the grand man. I'm talking about animal skins.
Yes.
Okay. And the given use of the skin, or those who are of the skin, Mr. and Mrs. Skinson, is to actually be those who hold truth in its form, okay, in its shape, in its entirety and integrity. And that is because the skin holds out both internal skins, membranes, and outside skin holds the body in its permanent form. So therefore, those in the skin are those who actually are in that use and are seen by others to be rather rigid in their viewpoint, because they're always emphasising the need for correctness and so on. I find that very interesting,
yes, okay,
in that sense, but it comes in with the animal skins here, yes, over the tabernacle,
yes,
keeping the format as it should be.
Yes, okay.
I don't know how this relates, but in the body, particularly on the skin at the outside level, is where the body itself reacts violently against any kind of invasion or bruising or whatever. It's
good point. Well said.
It's really the only place.
Yeah.
It's a very strong protection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
It's your largest organ of your body, your skin.
It is. Yeah.
I was thinking the last couple of days, I've been thinking, the wedding cake. I was thinking that, like, in each organ of the body, it's got those levels. You know, it's like every cell's got an internal and an external.
Mm.
Every organ's got an internal and an external. So, you know, we sort of think three heavens and there's, you know, they're like that and they're higher and that, but it's not just in the whole thing, it's each little part of the body, each little part of the ground man's got the three levels within each other.
Just to come back to the idea of intermediary, the whole thing is intermediary.
Mm.
Okay. This is about a dwelling place for the Lord in our lives. And for me, that clicks me into a fascinating word Swedenborg uses, which is accommodation. Accommodation. So it's how we relate to what is good and true in our lives. And that's, you know, where the Lord is to be found. It's the accommodation itself is not the Lord, but it's what houses it. And that's what we have here. And we have it. And Swedenborg specifically talks about intermediaries here at the dividing level. Talks about that as intermediary communities between what is celestial and what is spiritual there. That sort of got me going on the whole issue of the veil. You know, there was a point where Moses has to wear a veil, okay, because his face shines and it scares everybody. So he has to wear a veil. And the thing about it is, in a sense, it's a protection from, but on the other hand, it gives access to. It's both. It's not a closing down. It's a division, but it gives access to. And so that's
a
filter.
It's a filter.
Without which we actually can't relate to what is behind the veil. And that's a really important part of this picture. It also brings to mind the clouds of heaven.
And
the whole issue of thing of clouds,
yeah,
in that, yes, in a sense they hide, but in another sense they also provide the foundation into which something can flow, so that we can actually relate to it and understand it and see it. So there's all of that is wrapped up in the way Swedenborg talks about this veil in particular. But then, of course, it's through the whole thing as well. Because, I mean, don't forget the cherubim were pretty much everywhere on the linen curtain.
Mm. And when the Lord finished his work in the world, the veil was...
What's interesting about that, I'm not sure if it's Hebrews, but it speaks of the veil that Moses wore was to conceal the decline in glory.
Mm.
So you have this idea of descent like with Moses, and then with the Lord, the veil is rent open. It's open, so there's an advance in glory. So you have an up-down idea tied in.
So I've always thought of the veil as in terms of that which was hidden was open, but
shutting
that's
off,
an interesting
down.
Corresponds yeah. because it means that the Lord's life actually exposed the decline. If you read it that way, as well,
showed up,
not the slide, yeah. showed up, yeah. yeah, exposed it, you know.
So at a personal level, it's like we take truth in, and for me, like I often view the idea of temptation arises from our reluctance to let go of our understanding of truth at a particular point in time to move into what is good. So the idea of taking hold of truth, which is wonderful, we come across it, and it's great, you know, you've got these insights, but those insights can act on and are appropriate for that state of life that you might be in at that particular point in time. But as your state begins to shift, that truth is no longer able to contain that and has to be let go of, and then we have this process of struggle while that occurs, and then when it's let go of, there's an opening and a new truth comes to hold the new state in place. And so you have this
like the snake shedding its skin every season.
You know, the truth gives us a vision of the glory, but it also conceals what's possible beyond that, because we're always in a finite level, and then it's the breaking through to the good. And it came to me too, Julian, when you were talking about the word explained versus the arcana. Swedenborg struggle can be viewed as a struggle, I might have mentioned it, but to get beyond the literal sense, get beyond his understanding at any particular point in time. And so you have this like bang, and then bang, you know, like it's all...
Like Maxwell Smart moving through the door.
You have the idea of descent, you know, the truth that's no longer able to serve what is spiritual in terms of your states actually becomes false to you. And then that has to be done away with so that a new truth can come and support the good that comes out of that.
Yeah, which comes back to something you said earlier over there in our break, that we're permitted to see what we're able to understand and comprehend at the time, and it's like that's only a part of the full story that we need to move into, and each one has to be broken away in order for the next shell to be
I'd add to that always what I've said before at the seminar, and that is that to us it seems tantalising, nay frustrating, but actually it's glorious that it is like that.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay? In our sequential existence, to keep coming into new presentations of greater truth is the greatest motivation that any of us could need, so long as they actually lead to the good as the outcome from them.
Yeah.
Otherwise it's academic.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
I don't know. I probably can throw stones at it or something, you know, and be the heretic. I just look at our picture, right, and I look at the Lord's crucifixion, and that started basically the Christian church, but that veil disappears. And to me, it sort of looks like, it's where, the Lord came here, he said, it's not the literal sense, it's more behind it, it's not the act you do, it's the thoughts that are already committed, it's the whole spiritual sense that's already there and available and accessible to the entire Christian church. We come along, but there's not another level. It was already there. You know, it's just what I'm trying to say. There's not another vial.
It's become more efficient.
That's right. So, you know, we sometimes have this sense as well, you know, we're the only ones, and oh, it's only if you have this, then you can get through. But there is not another vial.
Yes.
You know, it's already there, and you know, you've read something from Hebrews, there's other spots in there where the early apostles, you know, very clearly knew exactly what was going on there, but there simply wasn't enough uptake in the world of that.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd just sort of.
Yeah, that's fine. What opens the veil?
The Lord.
What is?
Yes. I would say the crucifixion actually does, but for us, it's a crucifixion of us.
But that's the death. The crucifixion is the death of the previous state and the previous understanding, the previous knowledge.
It's the light. It's the truth. It's blasted it open to me. The light of the power of the truth blasted it down.
And how do we come to see the truth?
By seeing and then responding actively to understanding truth from the Lord as being for our use in life, in terms of how we live our lives, it's the non-vacuum of the spiritual level.
It relates to life.
So as we do something, it flows in.
It's good. It's how we live our life. I was saying to Paul last night after dinner, walking back down here, there's a lovely passage which talks about judgment and judgment with the evil and judgment with the good. And the difference between them. And basically it says, well, the judgment with the evil is different because they have separated themselves from good. They've separated themselves from the Lord's mercy. So they are judged by the Lord in the only thing that they can relate to, which is truth. Whereas the good have not separated them. They've allowed the good to come in and to have a relationship with the good. And so they are judged from truth and good, united together. Enlightenment is all about good. It's not about truth. So we can take one of these books and you can learn as much of this as you like, but it doesn't actually get you beyond the veil. It's good, and gosh, we forget that so often.
Yes.
That's good.
The word evil in its original word simply means separated. That's its original meaning. It doesn't mean wicked, bad, awful, dreadful. It means separate or separated, which is exactly
what you're saying. And it relates to what Dave said here. Freedom follows from the remission of sins. So that, because we go about the practice of repentance, we then have the freedom to walk through the tabernacle.
Yeah, so like if you look at the, like you were speaking about before, about the ordering of the furnishings. So the ordering, it's all dropped down, and then, you know, you have the altar. That's where, you know, those sacrifices occur, and that gives entrance. So again, it's this idea of up and down, or down and up, however you want to. It's happening in relation to the tabernacle and its formation.
And there's not the same. There's not the same protection existing here as there is in here. And this is quite fascinating. So we can seem to be able to dip in and out of this a bit more easily.
Truth.
It is truth, and you know. So things like, you know, Swedenborg talked to spirits, to evil spirits who get raised up into the light of heaven and can see quite plainly the nature of their life. But then, of course, they return back to their, you know, the state that they love, the thing that they love so much. They drop back out of this, but they're not allowed in here.
I always relate a lot of this kind of veiling and withholding with the verse in the Gospels, which to me is supra important. That is that blaspheming against the Son of Man will be forgiven, but those who blaspheme against the Holy Spirit, to them it will not be forgiven. And my take on that is basically, just as you just said, you can mess around with discussing truth and do the real stuff no harm whatsoever. In fact, it's quite an entertaining activity.
Yes.
Comparing notes and all the rest of it. But if you get it wrong, well, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine, you know.
We were talking last night about discussing the pre-Adamites over a beer.
Oh, really?
that's right.
But blaspheme against the Holy Spirit is, you know, the love, the truth, the love, the good, the final reality, and it cannot be forgiven if you break into or offend that level. You're beyond redemption.
Yeah, that's the core, right? That's the core, and if the core is destroyed or just or not in it,
yes,
then it ain't worth it. It's just a shell.
That's right.
So the Holy Spirit is the truth that comes from life. And so to deny that or to begin to use that for selfish ends, or that the process is such that if you fall into a state where you actually do that, you close down your own conscience and you seal it. Whereas when you're just working from ideas and truth,
Can I throw something else on the table? Because you know, I'm talking about a variety of things, including growth of the church and whatever else. Like, do we need the physical existence of these books for and our organisation, or a physical organisation for the new church to survive? The new church proper.
Well, I guess I need it.
I'm attached to it, don't get me wrong. But I'm just thinking, it's just the more I'm sort of...
If you get
over time, I get less attached. I was very attached to the church form because I never grew up with anything. I'd like to have something given me kind of structure and support. And I'm slowly no longer sort of needing those crutches. It's amazing. But so I'm now no longer attached, and day by day goes on, and this sort of jolts me in the direction of this sort of weekend, in less needing the actual structure of the organisation.
But that structure has served to support you to come to here.
Absolutely.
So these are the skins,
as
they are in their ultimated form.
I'm not saying get rid of it, I'm just saying that you can take it to the highest level and say, are they necessary?
Well, yes, they are. I would say they are. Just as your skin is necessary to hold your thought and your affection in the world.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
The sheet that I've just handed around is from this book. So it's just a summary. Really, it's about the offerings that were given. So this is really the previous chapter, but the way he deals with it in here, it's all intermeshed. He's talking about one whilst he's talking to the other, because this is the materials that go into making this tent and its furnishings. So things like, he says, there are basically 12 different offerings. It's quite significant in itself. Then he groups them in three groups of four. In the first two groups, I just noticed that there's an odd one out. You know, so in the first group, the odd one out is linen. The other three are metals. In the second group, the odd one out is the wood. And then we have olive oil and spices, and then we have the precious stones, the onyx stones, and the stones that people have in the breastplate. On the flip side, there is reference to the colours. And then also to the design of the cherubim and what that means. So I've given page numbers so you can see where they've come from in this. So that sheet is entirely out of this book.
I don't know if it has relevance, but both linen and wood grow above ground, whereas all the metals come from below ground.
Yeah.
Okay. Just another perspective.
Metals come from within rock as well, don't they?
Yeah. So it has to be gotten that deep in the earth, so you know it's deeply buried within us somewhere.
Yeah. Under very difficult conditions, heat and pressure. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the above ground grows with a lot more ease.
Mm-hmm. Another observation that I made about the chapter is there's a couple of places where it says the tabernacle shall be of one piece. Don't know whether you spotted those.
Yeah.
What's really interesting is actually to think of all of this stuff. What is the tabernacle? What is the tabernacle? Anybody got an answer to that?
It is what it does.
It is what it does?
Mm-hmm.
When we talk, I'm talking specifically about materials here. Right, so the physical material of which it was made. What is the tabernacle?
Some of it was wood, but a lot of it was gold.
Actually, none of it was wood.
It wasn't.
None of it was a tent.
Sorry. Someone said before, earlier, it was a tent.
A tent. The thing about it is, the wood, the boards overlaid with gold, are actually not part of the tabernacle. They give it its structure.
Yeah.
But the tabernacle itself is something else.
Yeah. Space.
Yes, it is. But space. I'm talking about materials here.
Oh, sorry. Okay,
what are the materials that actually make up the thing called the tabernacle?
Linen.
The linen.
Yeah.
And I think I also picked it up, the wool also. Let me see. Yeah, so just notice, in verse 11 there is, right at the end, that it may be one, but then there's also, in verse 6 and in verse 11. Right?
Maybe that's...
So that the tabernacle may be one tabernacle.
That it's overlapping, that there's no joins, so to speak, so there's only one entry into it.
Yeah, it's interesting form. It's made up of these pieces which are clasped together, but then you've got these two layers there, and they are the tabernacle. Right? The boards or the frames, whichever translation you're using, only provide the thing with its shape and structure.
That's true. You have a tent, and you have tent poles, don't you?
Yeah. So there's actually, although the whole thing is the tabernacle, there's this distinction within the design that actually only the first two coverings, from the inside out, are actually the tabernacle. The rest is additional to it, either covering over at the top of it and protecting it, or holding it up and giving it structure. And he speaks, Swedenborg talks about those boards, the wood being the Lord's merit. And in De Charms, he talks about that merit giving it its freedom. That's the thing that gives you the possibility of moving around inside. Otherwise, you've just got this curtain sitting on top of you. But it's just interesting that those boards, although they give it a space inside, they're not actually the tabernacle. Mm-hmm. The tabernacle itself is those coverings, coverings, which are then covered.
Yeah, the outer coverings are just like waterproof, some sort of protection, aren't they?
That's very reminiscent of the posts and lintels of temples, which is the posts are the things, the truths that hold up the good that actually is the entrance, you know? The good is higher than the truth, but the truth is anchored in the physicalness of the uprightness. It's got to be upright, otherwise it's not going to hold it up.
Mm.
And it's the same with those poles. The poles hold the poles hold up the tent, which is the good. Just get that. It's my son.
So, Jen, just an observation about this. So the whole thing is given its structure and is held up and performs the function it does because of the way the Lord works in our lives. That's actually not part of us. Sorry.
How's a mere mortal supposed to work all this out?
Just be tired.
I mean, there must have been sincere seekers of, you know, in other Christian denominations, had an open heart, were reading the Bible.
I think there are, because I think I have heard and come across a general collective Christian idea that Christ is represented in all the scriptures.
Yeah.
Okay? So if you ask somebody who does not have Arcana Volume 11, they will still be able to tell you about the symbolism relating to Christ. And when they say Christ, their theology may be awkward, but their sense of Christness, I think, is you know, rich.
Yes.
Okay? So I don't think it's a kind of, you know, AC only thing whatsoever.
If you want to talk about the idea of type, typology.
Oh, yes, that's good stuff too.
Links in with this idea. Mm. Paul speaks of Adam as being a type of Christ. Mm. We have the word stereotype, which gives you some idea of what it means, what it's about. And this is a way in to do that. Also, it's worth mentioning, and one of the reasons I used that passage from AC right at the start, the whole idea of it representing the human, and there being aspects of this which reflect the aspects of the human body, there is an awareness of that out there as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you can look up web pages. I've certainly seen web pages that relate, say, the Temple of Solomon to the human body as well. I think there'll be stuff on the tabernacle also doing the same thing. So, I mean, it's a representation of the human form. And that's acknowledged, not by all, but by some.
Is there a strand of the Jewish tradition that would enlighten people as well about the inner meaning of the tabernacle?
Yeah.
Is there...
I
would imagine there would be.
The Jews do a lot. I mean, when they do their bar mitzvah, they read their passage and then they have to talk about what it means to them. They do a lot of stuff like that.
And also you would have in the sort of Kabbalistic aspect of Judaism, which is akin to deeper meaning, in the Kabbalah you would have the form and the symbolism and the gematria of numerical combinations and so on, all picturing divine essence and flow and perfection. So while it may not go into, and I'm not pedestalizing the arcana, well, of course I am, but you know what I mean, I'm not saying it's better than that, but they actually do get the essence, as I think Christians do get the essence, because as human beings, we do resonate with natural meaning in our being. You know, otherwise poetry would be a pretty boring.
We speak that way in everyday language.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
In Kabbalah, they have a doctrine of Adam Kadmon, which has very similar ideas to that of the grand man. Mm. So there are things there. Yeah.
Look, really what I've just given you with the sheets is a resource to go and have a look at the further. I do have... one of the things I've done the last couple of sessions is to sort of, you know, with each of the paragraphs, he says, well, you know, here's a few words from the verse, here's what it means. And I've sort of collated that into 6 pages or something. So I've got that here for anybody who wants to jump into that. It's unnecessary, but it's there. It was just one of those things that helped me get a picture of the whole thing. So I've got that if anybody wants a copy. As I say, I found this a little bit really helpful. So I'd recommend that to anybody to have a look at. There's my copy is there. And I think we're going to round it up.
Thanks, Dave. That's great.